All right, welcome in. It is a Friday afternoon, and we are live here on Sports Talk. You just heard from him. He's Alberto Retta behind the glass producing the show. He's screening the calls, and he's running the commercials. And he got a nice fist pump from legendary head coach Mike Price, who is going to start us off here on the show here today. Welcome back to Sports Talk. Steve Kaplowitz back in action Monday. I'm Adrian Broaddus. I'll be hosting today. We've got a busy show, and we're going to get things started with one of our favorites, one of our absolute favorites. And he's back in town for a little while, hanging out here in El Paso. And we had to throw out the offer. We needed Mike Price to close out the week, and he's starting off the week with us here on the show. Coach, what's going on? Welcome back to El Paso.
Like I was saying, we love El Paso. The Price family loves it. I mean, and my wife and I were driving in from the airport the other night and just saying, God, you know, there's all kinds of beauty out there, isn't there? Because we just we really, really like it. It feels like home to me. And we've got a lot of great friends, and we're living in Idaho now, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, on a lake. So we got a nice gig going there, too. But we like coming back here, and this is home to us.
Yeah, it definitely – well, it's home to a lot of people, right? And it should be home to you because you've been you coached here for so long here at UTEP. And, of course, you had a lot of success. So fans welcome you back whenever you have a chance to come back
to
town.
We had a lot of fun. And I hope that this new coach is going to do that too. You know, I met him and talked with him, and I was impressed. And I think he's starting out doing the right things. He's got lots of energy, man. Woo! And I thought I had energy, but that dude is off the chart. But he's doing the right things. And I like what you just said. As we were coming in here, they plan to throw the ball every 12 seconds.
Yeah, it's going to be a high-intensity, high-powered offense for this football team.
I dig that. I'll tell you, I like that a lot. So, I'm excited about the future. And my son now, Aaron, has crossed the line, I call it.
I know.
Going from coaching to administration. So, he's loved it. He loves this place. He loves the people. He's just really found a home. And didn't want to leave for sure. And then all of a sudden, pop, you know, a job comes up. And I didn't say poop, did I?
No, I think you said pop.
Yeah, I think I said pop. Yeah.
Hey, this is the beauty of live radio. And this is the beauty of having you here on the show, Mike. And it's great to have you, Coach. Now, I would ask you this. Now, there's been so much changes here at UTEP. And you just talked about some of them that you noticed. You follow this program religiously.
Yeah.
You're actually a big listener to Minor Talk. And I appreciate you listening to Minor Talk.
Listen to Minor Talk out in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, on the lake. And we watched every game, of course, and we came to three or four games last year also.
Yeah.
So to watch Aaron, and so we're I'm excited about the future. I really am. I'm all in. I want UTEP to do great. I want their football team to do great. I love this community, and we will always come back here on vacation.
Alberto, go ahead.
Coach, what most surprised you in your return to the borderland?
Nothing really. It's always been we've come back quite a bit, you know, probably half a dozen times a year,
and so we've
seen the changes, but the freeway hasn't changed any. It's pretty busy, but not much. I love the way it is. Downtown, I guess, has done some really cool things, and so
sure.
That's fun for the. At least adult fun, you know, down there. So, but we know we love the sports here, and Tim Floyd and I talk to each other all the time, I got to know and respect Dana Dimmel, who was close. These guys were close the last couple of years. Every time it seemed like his year, he was close, and got into one bowl game, but I think the style of offense that Walden is bringing is what the fans want to see right now. And they want to see enthusiasm, and they want to see a guy that's aggressive, and that's the way he is. So, I'm all in. I'm all going to support everything I can for these guys. In fact, tomorrow we have the Orange
Yeah, Fan Fiesta.
Fan Fiesta, yeah. And so I'll be at that too. So that was kind of fun. But
excellent. Some of our listeners will probably see you out there. They're going to say hi, which is great. Sure. I want to ask you about two of your former players, because two of them are doing some great things right now. One of them's here in town, one of them's not. But I want to ask you about your two, I would say, more memorable quarterbacks, Jordan Palmer and Trevor Vitito, okay? So Jordan right now is the quarterback guru, and not just for college athletes, but for NFL pros and the best of the best in the game right now. Trevor is ascending in the high school football ranks right now, and he is currently out at Irvine High School. He just finished a successful stint out at Chapin. They have some coaching changes over there. He's now at Irvine High School and doing a lot of great things here in this local community. What's it like kind of seeing these two guys approach this game from a more of a coaching perspective now?
Well, yeah, I talk with Eric, who's my oldest son. He's in the UFL right now, quarterback coach and offensive coordinator. And then Aaron was our quarterback coach and offensive coordinator when I was here also. So those two guys have been close to Trevor and Jordan, and Eric and I had two summers. We've had quarterback camps up in Washington that we do at night during the spring and the summer. And so we had we only take 6 to 8 kids a night. And so we've gotten great response, and Jordan has helped us a lot in his drills. He's still doing some of the drills he did when he was here. And last year, actually, I went and saw Trevor coach at Chapin and watched the whole game, and he's doing some exciting thing. And he's a great guy. He'll be a good candidate sometime for UTEP.
I think so too. I mean, and also what both of these guys are doing to get guys ready to play at the next level. I mean, for Trevor and what he's doing out here in the northeast side of El Paso, he's getting guys ready for college. For Jordan, he's getting guys ready in college, but also ready for the NFL too.
Right. Yeah. And my two sons, like I said, communicate with those two guys a lot, and so we're still close friends. And they were great players here. Just awesome. And so they matured and got better and really turned out to be fine quality people.
Okay, now I'm really starting to think about this. The Mike Price coaching tree is actually crazy, because it's those two coaches right there, and Jordan Palmer and Trevor Vitito. And there's a lot more, but Donald Buckram's having a lot of success right now coaching high school football in East Texas right now.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. I didn't realize that.
And Quentin Demps is currently the head coach at Judson, out for the NAIA school.
I know. Quentin's really, he was really a great athlete and great player. And he had kind of a blended career here too. We wouldn't have won as many games toward the end without him. He ended up being a strong, strong, great football player his senior year.
You know, I have to ask you something, Coach, because this is a topic that got brought up a lot last year, and I just want to get your two cents on it. It's the transition from Nike to Adidas. Back when you were coaching here at UTEP, how big was the fact that you all had an affiliation with any brand? Like the fact that it was Nike at one point, and just the fact that, was that a recruiting tool for you guys at any point?
It was then. It was then. Actually, I was on the Nike football board of directors for Nike. And so then when we came here, we didn't have anything. And so then I became good friends with Phil Knight, and I called him and said, "Hey, you got to help us out here."
I didn't realize that's the story.
Yeah, and so and Seiko was brand new. The equipment guy was brand new, and of course he said, "Sure." And so we got a pretty good, with Bob Stoll's help. Bob Stoll did a lot for this program and is really, should be regarded highly. He did a super job, and so he helped us get that going with Phil, and so we started out Nike. And it did. The kids loved it. I mean, the players loved it, and the recruits loved it. Now it's not now it's more common, than Nike is. But I think they got a good thing going now with Adidas. So.
Yeah, no, I think just brands and affiliations are big, right, in college football. And it just, I mean, it just shows you the lore and stuff like that. But it's interesting that, you know, almost 20 years ago, now it's still, it was really popular then. It still is popular now. I would say that it's more about who's going to bring out the new uniforms and stuff like that. For new uniform day, whenever you guys got to reveal those, how big of a day was that for your players?
Oh, it was great. It was really good. The first year we did it, Quentin Demps. And I can't remember who the other player was. We had the new unis and new uniforms, and no one saw it. So they, in our opening banquet of the year, it was in the Durham Center, and so I had that just before the banquet started. I got up and said, you know, this is what we're going to look like next year. And the doors opened up of the elevator, and Quentin Dempson, I can't remember who the other kid was in the other color uniform, came walking out with smoke coming out of the elevator.
I like it.
Oh, and everybody went nuts. And then the fire alarm went off. And so about 10 minutes later, the fire department showed up. And
this was
a big, nice banquet. So it was kind of hilarious, but that kind of highlights my career, I think.
I love it. I love it right there. Again, we got Coach Price here joining us here on Sports Talk as we kick things off here on the program. Coach, a lot has changed in college athletics recently. NIL, transfer portal are really, you know, swallowing up this sport on all, not necessarily college football, but actually all of college athletics right now. You tell me, because this is something that programs can't just run away from anymore. It can't be the scared thing in the corner, or the thing in the corner that you're scared of. It has to be something you honestly embrace in college athletics right here. How do you see it right here?
Well, I don't appreciate the new rules and that type of thing. I think we're creating a lot more problems and we're creating more separation between schools like UTEP and schools like BYU and Texas A&M, who were always way, way ahead of us financially and all that kind of stuff. But still, it's going to create some holes. I know I'm very active in Washington State University. It's only an hour from where
we live
in Coeur d'Alene. And then my grandson's a wide receiver at Idaho. And, for example, Idaho, they had a great year this year. They were tied for the championship of the game. They went to the playoffs, and their quarterback was a junior and really good. And their running back was the best MVP of the league in the Big Sky, and they had a great wide receiver. And now, boom, the quarterback's at Oregon State for $550,000. The wide receiver, I can't remember who he is, but some big school, and the running back's going to Cal Berkeley. So, I mean, they lost 8 guys off their team from the winning team. And I can see that happening here, too, you know. Can you recruit to UTEP? Heck yes, you can recruit. I mean, we got 5 guys in the draft and 2, I think, 7 altogether will have a chance to play pro football. So you can recruit. And we just didn't get it done on the field all the time, but it's still the qualities are still there that make UTEP a great place for any athlete, really.
I agree. Now, Washington State, you brought him up. I got to ask you realignment. This is something that's also changed the landscape of college football.
That really pissed me off, you know, when they dropped Oregon State and Washington State from their meetings. It was really a surprise, very bad way they approached it. They were all together for 10 teams were all together. We lost UCLA and USC. And then overnight, literally overnight, because we're going to sign a new contract the next morning, and the president of Washington State and the president of Oregon State are sitting down there having dinner and said, having breakfast. I said, is it the meeting 9 o'clock? I thought it was at 8 o'clock. And then the phone started ringing, and they found out all those 8 teams left. Kind of tacky and not good, not done well at all. So that's, and then the AD leaves, goes to the University of Washington, our rival. He just got up and left, and the president now is retiring. So I think it's a lot from the strain of the job, too, and the new changes, and it's going to be different in fundraising now. It's going to be a lot different. We're going to have to, you know, get some money on the NLI, and they're building a new locker room, which is great. Going to be awesome for the players, and so it's kind of turned to a money game. Guys coming in the locker room, just seeing how much they can, you know, you recruit a kid, you try to develop him from a high school kid to a college kid in 4 years, and then, you know, that's not happening anymore. If the guy's good, he leaves for money.
Right.
And parents are asking for, well, that's all great and nice. All these things are nice, but what about us? How much money are we getting? You know, and it's breaking, I think, the morale and the team spirit that football was so good at. It's such a team game. Now, you know, the quarterback's getting all the money and the running back's getting all the money and the linemen are playing and blocking for them. And they're probably getting down a little bit about the situation. Where, you know, I block for this guy and I don't get a dime, you know.
Right. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, the world of college athletics has changed so much, Coach. And, I mean, we could spend 3 hours talking about this, honestly. But, Coach, I just want to thank you. I don't want to take too much of your time this afternoon. I really appreciate you stopping by, giving us some great old stories here with us, reminiscing about the old time, but also talking about the future. You're encouraged. You're motivated by Scotty Walden. And, Coach, I just really appreciate you stopping by. Anything you want to say to our listeners, because they love you, and
Keep the faith, because I got goosebumps right here just talking about it. I'm looking forward to next season, and I'm looking forward to the job that the athletic department is doing and the school and the alumni and the fans. And the fans here, I just talked to the coaches, Walden's staff, and said, hey, you're not going to believe it. When you get going here and we start tossing that ball around and winning, this place is going to freaking explode. I've been there. I've seen it. To my, you know, 50,000 people in that stadium to watch UTEP, you know, and not the other team. So I'm excited about the future.
I am too. Coach, thanks again for stopping by.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Coach Mike Price joining us here in our studios. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, UTEP Track and Field is here. Coach Mika Laaksonen and two players as well. We're going to talk about the big UTEP track event next week. That's all coming up next here on 600 ESPN El Paso. Studios. Adrian Broad is here along with Alberto Retta. You all can move those mics close to you just so they can capture all your voices and everything. Thank you very much. We got members of the UTEP track and field team here coming up, Xavier Butler and Naisha Berger. Naisha is making her second appearance in almost a month. Third appearance in 2 years, right? I love it. We're going to talk to both of them in just a second. But first, I got to bring on UTEP track and field head coach Mika Laaksonen, who's joining us here in our River Oaks Property Schoolyard Sports Studios. Coach, it's been a while since I've seen you. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's been too long. It's good to be back.
It's been way too long. That's right. Hey, we've got a big event coming up next week. It's UTEP Track, who's hosting their event for, you know, their big end-of-the-season meet, May 10th through the 12th. It's all happening out at Kitt Field. Give our listeners a little, insight on this one right here.
Well, yeah, we're hosting we provide the opportunity to host the Conference USA Outdoor Championships. So that's pretty much the end of the season for most of our student athletes in our sport. So we try to be best job possible. And we haven't hosted an event for a while, so it's going to be a big challenge for us. And at Conference USA, we decided to go from a 4-day schedule to a 3-day schedule. So things are kind of more condensed now, more intense now. And we also kind of followed what NCAA does during the first round and then the final site at the championships. They kind of have like a gender split there. So women compete maybe day one, day three, men day two, day four. So what we did with our conference championship meet, we put tons of qualifying events on that Friday the 10th. And then Saturday the 11th is kind of like a gap day or a pretty light day. And then we're hitting with all the finals on Sunday.
Okay.
12th. So
it's an exciting weekend.
If you're going to come to watch, then Sunday is by far the best day. I think we have 13 or 14 finals then.
Okay, so this is huge, right? Because Conference USA Championships this next week, this coming week, a lot goes into putting these events together, just like you mentioned. Big day is Sunday, so circle May 12th. I know that's Mother's Day, but it's a great way to spend it, especially if you're a UTEP athletics fan and you just want to come out and support some track and field, watch some of the best in the conference do it, and then qualify for the NCAA Outdoor Championships, which, by the way, Fayetteville, Arkansas, it's May 22nd through the 25th for the outdoor first rounds. It's a lot, Coach. I mean, we're talking about you all coming off a real busy indoor season, going right out to outdoor season, and it's really nonstop weekend, every weekend, as far as what you guys do competitive-wise.
Yeah, I mean, we count as six sports. We have men's and women's cross-country indoor-outdoor. So cross-country starts somewhere before your school starts in the fall. So we start that in the middle of August.
Right.
And then outdoor ends somewhere in the middle of the June. So it's a pretty long season for us student athletes and for coaches too.
It's like 365, Coach. Yes. Well, let's talk to some of your two members here who are joining us here in person. And we're so excited about this. Naisha Berger is back, third time with us here on the program, which we're excited. Only time I've actually hosted with you, being the interviewee here on the program. But you tell me, the fact that you're hosting Conference USA Outdoor Championships next weekend, what an opportunity for fans to come out and watch best of the best in this conference, right?
Well, I think it's a good opportunity for fans to come out and see the UTEP track and field. Since we haven't been hosting no meet, always been other sports, so I think fans should come out to see what the track team can do.
And let's talk a little bit about what you could do, Naisha, because you had a very successful indoor season, and that's why you joined us recently. That's why you were here about a month and a half ago. You set the program record in the 200-meter dash, 22.9 in February. This was out at the Jarvis Scott Open. You were also the Conference USA Women's Track Performer of the Meet, while you were also set to compete in the indoor championships across NCAA back in Boston. This is all the things that we talked about before. But how about this right here? You have been honored with Conference USA Athlete of the Week honors left and right. You are also nationally ranked in the outdoor 100 and 200 meter dashes at the start of April. This has been it's been a nice indoor season that's led to a strong outdoor season. How has the transition been for you to go from indoor to outdoor and to still try to find the success on your side?
Well, the transition has been good. Training has been good. Just staying focused and, like, staying healthy is the key.
How tough is that? Durability and just staying healthy, period.
It's tough because not all the time you want to do recovery stuff that, like, matters the most. But I'll say having someone like Xavier, we both go to the training room all the time. So I'll say having someone to go with you, that's a key thing.
Well, think about it. Look at how athletes prioritize their health nowadays. You look at the sport of basketball. Caitlin Clark, LeBron James, those two prioritize their health at a high level. You look at football. Those players, they need to stay healthy or they're not playing on the field. Track and field. This is a sport where you guys are competing so often that you have to prioritize your health and recovery period, because if not, you can get tight, you can really struggle, and then suffer a significant injury. So for you, how much of a priority is recovery, just period?
100%. It is.
Do you do it daily, would you say?
I do it every day.
Could you give me a little example of what a recovery process works, or, you know, looks like for you?
So we cool after practice every day, we cool down and stretch. Okay. Then either we go to the training room, we either get dry needling, ice bath, contrast, and those stuff.
Okay.
Stem and ice, those stuff.
Okay, Xavier, I'll bring you in on this because you're also the expert. You've been joining the recovery room as of late, according to Naisha. You tell me, what's the recovery process for you? How much do you prioritize this for you?
I feel like recovery is like one of the biggest things that you need to be performing at such a high level, because we run 100%. Like, we're competing. We have to be like at 100% to run fast every day. So I would say, before practice, I will go to get treatment to make sure my body's all warm. And then we make sure we have a long warm-up. And then after, like she said, we cool down And then we'll go to the training room right after practice also.
Okay. We got the recovery down. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. Alberto Retta has got a bottom of the hour Sports Center update, and then we're going to talk more about the big one next week. It's the Conference USA Outdoor Championships happening out at Kidd Field May 10th through May 12th, all of next weekend, starting next Friday through Sunday. Tickets are available, and they will be $10 a day, or you pay $20 and you get to go to all three events throughout the weekend. We'll talk all about more of the details, the Conference USA Outdoor Championships, and more with the track athletes here. But let's go back to Alberto Retta. He is at bottom of the hour Sports Center update. Championships for track and field. It's happening all next weekend, May 10th through the 12th, out at Kidd Field. And joining us are members of the UTEP track team. Well, I gave Naisha a great introduction, so now I got to talk a little bit about Xavier here. He earned a pair of silver medals in the 200 meter dash and in the 4x4 relays at the Indoor Track and Field Championships. He's a 3-time Conference USA Freshman of the Week and also earned Outdoor Freshman of the Week honors as well. Just as of late, what's it like coming onto the scene for the first time here at UTEP, Xavier? What's it like just, you know, having success here through your freshman season?
Well, it's kind of something like I was expecting, but I didn't think it was going to be like this fast coming up. And I have like a great supporting cast, especially with like Naisha. She pushes. She's so successful. So like I want to be like that also. So that she pushes me, and like when I'm, especially like when I don't want to be disciplined and stuff like that, she always like that supporting cast to keep me disciplined and stuff like that.
You feel like you have a good friend group that you know you're one here at UTEP, right? I mean, freshman first season out here with the minors. What you feel like you have a good supporting group members of fellow teammates?
Yes, sir. I try to put myself around people who have the same goals as me and the same like drive and motivation as me.
Naisha, can you say that that's the case for a freshman like Xavier right here? What impresses you about him just in year one?
What impresses me the most about him? Like, he always want to win.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the mindset he has, and that's good.
Okay, now you tell Naisha over here, Xavier, what impresses me you about her and her demeanor, what she does. She's a killer, so, and I already knew this, right? This is the third time her coming into the station, so I already knew this about her, but she's a killer. What do you notice?
Well, at practice, like, she's just, like, on a different, like, level than everyone else. Like, her focus and, like, her, like, what she prioritizes, like, other people, like, they'll focus on, like, going out and other stuff. Like, she focuses strictly on track and like her schoolwork, so like that doesn't like surprise me like about like somebody like at her age, but like it just pushes me to do the same thing.
Would you echo those sentiments, Coach? What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking that I want some names, but based on what Xavier just said, the people at Prado's going out, I want to know who those people are. That's number one. So no, I second anything and everything these two young individuals just said. So.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, so you tell me, Coach, what's it like hearing, just that kind of approach to the game from these two? You have somebody who's done this before and then somebody who's coming on the scene for the first time here. Is this the right kind of attitude that you want out of your program right here?
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I think when it comes to practice, it's all about you getting better, full commitment, very, very focused. And you can't have any other things in your mind. And when you come to practice, the preparation for that one practice probably already started the day before, right after the previous practice. So mental preparation and then physical, like what this guy said, they use the training room. I don't know what they do to get their minds right or that kind of stuff. So, but that's nowadays kind of, how would I say, it's a very, very important aspect of anything and everything we do in athletics. And I think it's going to be even more important in the future, and we're looking into that area too. Like yesterday in our team meeting, we had a sports psychology counselor.
Nice. Introduce
himself and kind of tell everybody what he does and how he might be able to help some of our student athletes to perform better. So.
Naisha, we've talked about this before in the past. I mean, the mindset and the mental aspect of this is almost half the battle, if not even more of the battle right there. How big is that for you, just to kind of keep your mind in the right place? You almost didn't even want to hear what Xavier was saying, and that just tells me about your mindset right there. You just don't, you're so focused on what the task at hand is that you're on this kind of right there. But how important is your mindset, or just kind of your mental awareness and your mental health when you're approaching this sport?
My mental health is very well approaching this sport, because what I do, I set long-term and short-term goals. And I do have someone who I speak to. So, like, I always, like, ask for corrections. Like, I'm a student of the sport, so I ask when I make mistake. I watch, like, other athletes training to see what they're doing and, like, you're not pumping your arms properly or those stuff. So I'll say mental aspect, I'm good with it.
Nice. But it's hard, right? And
yeah,
I'm sure there's
hard.
A lot of pull and challenges for this right there. I'm sure it's also difficult with all the distractions, not to mention you're a student athlete, so it's the school aspect of it too.
Well, for distraction, that don't really bother me. Like, I could block you out, so I'm good with blocking out people with distraction, so I don't think that messed with me.
Okay. I like it. Xavier, let's talk to you, because this is something that's probably a little newer to you, just everything, whether it's the pressure of performing at these meets or just the pressure at practice and just trying to have success there. How do you approach it from just trying to have that clear mind, what we were talking about right now, a strong mental approach to the game?
It was kind of struggling when I first got here. I was kind of struggling with that because I would, like, compare myself to other athletes, like, around the world. Like, you would see, like, a high schooler running 9 seconds in 100, or, like, you just breaking records, like, every other day, but I'm going at a different pace than them. And I feel like when you compare yourself to other people, like, it takes away, like, all your motivation, like you're not doing enough. But, like, everybody has their own pace and their own way of going about things. So, like, once I got that together, like, everything started falling in place.
Who's your inspiration? That's a tough one, right? You have to think about that one right there.
Like, on the track or, like, off the track?
You tell me on both.
All right. So off the track, I would say my mom, because, like, growing up, I grew up in a single-parent home. So, like, my mom had to do a lot for me and my siblings, me and my two siblings. So, like, she would have to work, like, two jobs and, like, she never gave up. So, like, why would I have a reason to give up on the stuff I'm doing?
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in, well, first of all, I'm from Orlando, Florida. And then we moved to Houston, Texas when I was about 5 or 6, so we've been in the Houston area since.
So you can claim the Lone Star State, right? You can say you're Texas.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now you tell me, as far as the inspiration on the track field, who are some of the people who inspire you in the sport of track?
Well, I would say the big one, I'd probably say Usain Bolt. Yeah, I want to be like that. I want to break every world record, be the fastest man in the world.
Okay. I like it. I like it. Hey, we got more to talk about with both of you, and we're going to talk more about the actual track event itself. Stay with us. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to close it out and give more details, more information. It's the Conference USA Outdoor Championships, and they're coming next week. Starts Friday, and it goes all through Sunday. We'll tell you more ticket information and more about Naisha and Xavier here on the program. We're going to take a break right here. When we come back, more of Sports Talk here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, welcome back. We are live here on Sports Talk, wrapping things up here with UTEP Track and Field. They're hosting. It's the big one next week, and it starts May 10th. Conference USA Outdoor Championships to host a conference tournament. Coach, I got to bring you back on this one. Coach Mika Loxton enjoys this here in person. Coach, what's it like hosting a tournament? I mean, aside from all the stress that comes with this one, of just the preparation and everything, but for the fans and for the university, what's it like hosting this, you know, the Conference USA Outdoor Championships here?
I mean, when the event actually starts, I think that's when it's gonna get fun, and just anything and everything before it, just a lot of pressure. It's hectic, you know, takes a lot of time and you know, to get things right. So, like, you rather over prepare and then have everything go well than take any chances. So I know we have a good officials crew and the timer is top notch. He has top notch equipment, so it's going to be a good event, and we're going to run it run it really well, so I had no doubt about that.
Awesome. That's great stuff. And for all the listeners out there who want to come out and support UTEP Track and Field, two of their members right here are joining us. It's Naisha Berger and, of course, Xavier Butler. Both of them were UTEP Male and Female Athletes of the Year. I failed to recognize this earlier here on the show, but this just was awarded here recently. Naisha, you tell me, what was it like being named athlete across the campus, across the university out at UTEP for the entire academic year? What was that like?
Oh, should I explain it? No. I'll say,
You feel like you deserved it.
Yeah. The work that I have put in is like showing that I have done something.
Yes, that's right. Simply put, let me ask you this. Hosting, you just heard your coach talk about it. What's it going to be like for you? You're going to wake up in your own bed and then go out to Kid Field. This is not like an away event where you're out at a hotel or whatever it might be and getting ready for the track meet out away from El Paso, but now hosting the big one here. It's the Conference USA Outdoor Championships next week. What's it like?
I'll say I'm happy the conference is hosting at UTEP, so the team will have like access to the training room, so we can do recovery stuff there instead of like when we are ourselves, we have to like catch in ice and stuff. We could just go to the ice bath. Then it's my last outdoor, so conference hosting at UTEP at home, it's just good to like have the fans and everyone to see what the track team could do.
Do you feel like you might get a little emotional when it all starts? Not when you start. You're going to be locked in. But when it all kind of starts and you realize, man, this is the last go-round here for me.
Not really. Maybe after. Not when you start.
Okay.
After.
You kind of feel that emotion after, though? Tell me about that right there. Why is it – what is it that you kind of will feel about this one right here that will lead you to those emotions?
Like, seeing that I will not be competing outdoors for UTEP anymore, like, I'll miss my teammates, coaches, and stuff like that. So that emotion is going to come after that team meeting when you have to make that speech.
Right. Yeah, you're getting emotional talking about it right here. Because this means a lot to you. This is your life, and this is your school that you really catapulted on, right?
Yes, that's right.
I like it. All right, Xavier, let's bring you back in on this. This is your first time around, so you don't really know anything different, right, as far as Conference USA championships go for the outdoor portion. But the fact that it's at UTEP is cool, knowing that this city and this community can come out. What's your message to fans getting a chance to maybe come out and watch you? We talked about this off air, but you all could be, kind of coming as far as the schedule goes, maybe in the later part of the afternoon or early evening. But what is your message to fans to come out next week, starting Friday, May 10th, for the Conference USA Outdoor Championships?
Right. The sun's going to be coming down, so it's not going to be too hot, so that don't even worry about the sun. And we're going to put on a show for y'all. Football been doing it. Volleyball been doing it. Basketball been doing it, too. Now it's our turn to put on a shirt for El Paso.
Are you ready to see a good group of people out there and cheering you on? Is this going to be exciting for you?
Yes, I perform better like when there's more people around and like it's a big crowd. My adrenaline gets up. It reminds me of just like being at home, like on the home track. So like I'm ready.
Naisha, do you feel the same way? Do you feel like the crowd, the energy of the crowd, can fuel you throughout next week?
It depends. Not really.
You're in your own zone. No, you're in your own zone. Our listeners need to realize you've got your own thing going on. You got your own approach to this sport.
Yeah, that's true. But I would say fans should come and support the track team to see what we could do.
I love it. Hey, thank you all so much for being out here. Again, let's say it one more time. $10 each day, May 10th, May 11th, May 12th, all next weekend. It's the Conference USA Outdoor Championships, and it's all coming up next week out at Kidd Field and the Larry K. Durham Track Field out there as well. So just want to let everybody know, $10 a day, or get the whole weekend for $20. Thank you all so much for being out here today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. All right, we're going to take a break right here. When we come back, hour number two, right around the corner. Stay with us as 600 ESPN El Paso continues. Sports Talk, and we are busy this hour again, just after a busy previous hour. Special thanks to UTEP football head coach, I should say previous head coach Mike Price, and the UTEP track team, Mika Laaksonen, Naisha Berger, and of course Xavier Butler joining us all in our first hour. Second hour here of Sports Talk is also very busy. We're going to have members of UFC 301 join us here in our next segment, and then we'll talk to Iris Lopez to close out the hour here. Iris Lopez is our KISS FM morning show host, and she is putting together the Miha Market with her nonprofit that she founded, Miha Yes You Can, and they are doing the Miha Market, which is happening Cinco de Mayo out at Chuco Relic this Sunday, and that's all happening this weekend, and we're going to have Iris join us here in our final segment of this hour. But before we do that, we're going to talk to Steve Urseg. He's the one who's competing against Alexander Pantoja. This is the headliner. This is the flyweight content up on our website right now. All right, we got a lot to talk about here in our short amount of time because we're going to get out to all the interviews that we've got here this hour. But I want to give a big shout out to our great friend of the program, Texas High School Coaches Association, named it today, the Putt Powell Sports Writer of the Year, Felix Chavez, who's got this award. Big shout out to Felix, friend of the program, good listener here on Sports Talk. And yes, it was decided that he will be the Sports Writer of the Year. Felix does so much for the El Paso Times, does so much for covering local sports in the community, and well deserved for this honor here today. The big news today was the fact that UTEP earned a commitment. UTEP basketball news here today. We're going to spend a Friday 5 o'clock segment talking a little UTEP basketball, and that I would love that because here on this program we haven't been able to talk a lot of UTEP basketball news. Transfer portal officially closed earlier this week, middle of the week I should say, and now we hear news today that Devin Barnes, he is the Tarleton State transfer guard. He averaged 13 points a game, 2.2 assists. He has committed to UTEP, and he is going to be a UTEP minor here for this upcoming season. The Miners have two scholarships that they've awarded so far, Ahmad Bynum and now Devin Barnes here throughout this transfer portal process. They didn't really lose anybody to the portal right now. And when I say didn't really, they didn't lose any starters, any scholarship players who are returning from last year. That is definitely something to note. So you're running it back with David Terrell, running it back with Corey Camper Jr., Otis Frazier III, Kevin Kalu, so on and so forth. Derek Hamilton. You name it. Those guys are all coming back. The only guys they're losing are the guys they lost to graduation. Calvin Solomon, Zid Powell, Tay Hardy. Those are the three notable players that they're losing to graduation from last year's squad. So let's see what happens this time around with the news that Devin Barnes has committed to UTEP. Significant news, Alberto, knowing that the Tarleton State transfer guard averaged 13 points a game this past season. You needed somebody to supplement those the scoring points that you had from either Zid Powell or Tay Hardy. I'm not saying you automatically get it here from Devin Barnes, but at least this is a start, and I'm really excited. I'm bullish about this one right here. This acquisition, he's 6 foot nothing, but he's a guy who can really score and help the Miners out here this upcoming season.
Yeah, and I think he can hit the ground running. Maybe his first year or maybe his first couple goes here at UTEP might not be exactly what everyone wants, but I think that once he picks up, you know, the way that Miners are playing ball and the Joe Golding way of playing UTEP basketball, I think that he can really be a great piece to fill in for some of those guys who left, like you've been saying. So I really like this addition, and it'll be interesting to see how he does in his first couple games and if UTEP's going to do any more recruiting before the start of the season and who they bring in and if it's through the transfer or if it's high school guys or really just what's their plan. I'm interested because we saw that they have a good base. It's time to build off it.
Yeah, I think that's something I want to hit on because they've got one more scholarship left, and we've asked listeners about this before. So we'll table that conversation to the end of this discussion here because I think that's a great point that you bring up. What's next? What's on the horizon for the scholarship, the one lone scholarship remaining right here for UTEP basketball? basketball. That's a that's definitely a great point there, Alberto. For Devin Barnes, this is a player who, with Tarleton State, by the way, coached by Billy Gillespie, which is interesting in itself, he's going to come into UTEP with 2 years of eligibility left. Does he finish his UTEP his career in a UTEP uniform? Well, that's still left to be said. I mean, we're going to see what happens throughout that process, but for now, UTEP's got him. And who cares about the future? You have him now, and you have success here for one season. That you coach to try to win now. You don't coach to try to win here in the future for basketball. At least how quickly things move in the transfer portal and how much NIL impacts things, you just try to win now. You don't even worry about the future. But nonetheless, Barnes could have 2 years of eligibility with the minors, or, you know, for the foreseeable future, he's at least with this squad right now. Again, 13 points a game with Tarleton State out of the WAC. I would say the WAC in Conference USA, not that different from each other as far as level of competition and you know, pedigree as far as top to bottom. So UTEP, they just made their run to the Conference USA Tournament Championship game, and now they're looking to run it back with the squad who can, you know, maybe have a similar amount of success. They're bringing back Corey Camper Jr., Otis Frazier III, David Terrell. We mentioned already guys like Trey Horton and Baylor Hebb. Those guys are all going to help out in the backcourt. Ahmad Bynum and Devin Barnes are the two incoming transfer portal acquisitions the Miners got. So you're talking about a backcourt that has some experience with guys like Camper Jr., David Terrell, and of course Trey Horton. Those guys have experience right there. Then you also talk about the front court. The front court is led by guys like Elijah Jones, Kevin Kalu, Derek Hamilton. Those are the guys who are returning from last year's squad who are going to help them out in the front court. So immediately, fans would kind of come to this conclusion, Alberto, or might come to the conclusion, oh, well, just get a big. Like right now, you need a true big, you need a true forward, you need somebody who's going to help out down low. How realistic is that? I don't know. I mean, that's to be left. That's one of those things that we're going to have to find out through the transfer portal process. Most of the bigs in the transfer portal have already been snatched up. So I think the likelihood of them getting somebody closer to 6'7", even 6'6", and be more of an Alfred Hollins, for those fans who remember him two seasons ago, maybe somebody like that versus grabbing a guy who's going to necessarily fill that role of a big man, like a Kevin Kalu, who could be somebody who's like 6'10" or end up and plays down low. I just don't think that's going to be realistic, knowing how difficult it is to get a big in the transfer portal right now. However, it's still a need. I mean, UTEP might look at that forward position and recruit strictly for that. I'm curious, Alberto, do they get a wing? Do they get like a 3-and-D hybrid? Do they get a guy who's a sharpshooter who can hit from beyond the arc? Which, by the way, Devin Barnes averaged 39.7% in his three-point percentage last season. That might be your answer to the three-point woes and perimeter scoring woes that this team has had. Not to mention everything I hear about Ahmad Bynum, who is the guy who comes out of, I believe it's Trinity Community College, but regardless, he comes out of the JUCO ranks. Ahmad Bynum is I've been told that he's a go-to scorer as well. So if you get more of these go-to scorers, and then you pair them with guys like Corey Camper Jr., who could take a step forward next season, guys like David Terrell Jr., who was the freshman of the year at a Conference USA this past season, when you have all those things meshing together, Alberto, I feel like that's probably the recipe UTEP fans have been looking for. And I think a sharpshooter, I don't know if it's necessarily solved with Devin Barnes, but you at least have a proven three-point scorer right here.
Yeah, and I think that that's what fans want. Well, obviously, the three-point has been a big deal for minor fans. As it's been the last 2 years kind of a source, an eyesore, because sometimes for the minors, we'll struggle from the three, and that's not fun to watch. People love seeing guys shoot it from downtown and sink the three. That's extremely marketable. But look, I'll talk more about the big man. You touched on the big man topic, and I just want to say this. I think that the big man role in last year's team is being under scrutinized, in my opinion. If you take a look at how the NCAA tournament went and how the end of the UTEP minor season went, there's a kind of a little bit of overlap, and I think that that overlap needs to be studied. And what I mean there is, okay, so what did UTEP do in those last three games in the Conference USA tournament? They rode Derek Hamilton until his wheels came off. He had 10 points in that first game, 9 in the second, and then he had 6 he had 7 in the last game. So Derek Hamilton was a key piece in that UTEP Miners team. So having presence in the post is huge. And what did the guys in the NCAA tournament do? Purdue had a big man in the post who made them real fun to watch and helped them get deep. And so did Indiana State, right? And so,
you're talking about UConn?
David Burns. So those guys were extreme. So we had Zach Edey, David Burns in the NCAA tournament. Those guys made deep runs, big presence in the post. And I think that UTEP needs that. That's key. Yes, do you need shooters who can make threes? Yes, you do. But you also need a big man that you can develop, which they have guys on the roster already. Big man's on the rosters who you can develop, and that through them you can develop a presence in the post, and minor and fans can get into that, and I think that that's what fans had at the end of the season.
Are you arguing that Derek Hamilton needs a bigger role on this team?
I would argue yes, and if he's not the if minor fans don't want him to have a bigger role, I think that minor fans need a big man. The UTEP Miners need a big man in the post to dominate games, and I think that that's a key to success for them.
So, Luke, the Derek Hamilton issue is one of those things that UTEP fans are going to look at. It's not an issue. Derek Hamilton situation, I should say, is one of those that UTEP fans will say, well, look, he's a productive guy. He was productive in those last three games that you just mentioned right there. There are other fans who might argue, no, they need another answer. He simply can't keep up condition-wise. They can't rely on him to be somebody they rely on every single game, night in and night out. So I think it's interesting. It's an interesting conundrum. And then maybe you make the case Elijah Jones takes the next jump. Or Babacar Mbengue, who's the 7-footer who sat out last year as a redshirt. Maybe he makes a step up this next this upcoming season. Maybe that's the case. Kevin Kalu, I don't know if he can make that next step offensively that UTEP needs down low, but still, he's a guy who's been through the system. He's the rare junior and a true junior who's played all three seasons at UTEP and has an opportunity to finish out his career by playing on one team the four seasons at UTEP. So he's an interesting candidate for this as well. Can he fill that role? I don't know if this is where they go. I don't think the 5 or the 4 is necessarily a surefire recruitment spot for this final scholarship for UTEP, but it's going to be interesting to see. I think UTEP fans, if you're a UTEP basketball fan in particular, you should be definitely excited about Devin Barnes here moving forward. We got a couple tweets from this one right here. Clearwater said, UTEP has found its starting point guard. Devin Barnes seems like a proven and perfect for us. He was a productive player for a very good Tarleton team. They were second place in the WAC and they beat Grand Canyon once. This minor team will be better this upcoming season. Hopefully they don't disappoint. Clearwater, I'll say this. I don't think necessarily, Barnes is not necessarily going to play the point guard spot. He's going to play maybe an off-ball spot or a shooting guard spot, or maybe he's like a versatile guy who can play a little bit of both. David Terrell Jr. is your starting point guard next season, period. That's where the conversation ends right there. Tristan Pence, this is what he tweets into the program. Adrian, this is a nice pick for the Miners. He's a good combo guard that can hit the three-pointers. Yeah, you're exactly right, man. You're exactly right. The 40% from three-point range, that is definitely one of those things that I'm definitely looking at right there. Plus, not to mention, 43% from the floor for shooting. I like those numbers right there. He's shooting 43 from the floor, 39 from beyond the arc, and 85% from his free throw shots. Devin Barnes coming to UTEP as a junior transfer, from Tarleton State. So that's where the conversation ends right there. I think it's going to be interesting to see what UTEP does with the final scholarship. We will have a Minor Talk exclusive interview with a couple of the former players, or I should say current players on this UTEP basketball roster, along with UTEP head coach Joe Golding here in the offseason, as we typically do each and every year. So be on the lookout for that on our Minor Talk podcast channel. That will definitely be coming up here soon enough. But coming up next, we're going to take take a break right now. Coming up next, we got UFC 301 conversation coming up. Steve Urseg, he is the challenger against Alexander Pantoja. This is coming up tomorrow. UFC 301 pay-per-view, and you can get it on ESPN Plus, wherever you download the app itself, or whether it's the smart TV, on your smart TV, I should say. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, Steve Urseg is going to join us. And then after the SportsCenter update at the bottom of the hour, we'll get out to Jonathan Martinez. All of that is coming up next here as Sports Talk continues right here on 600 ESPN El Paso.
Update for 600 ESPN El Paso. Let's go over to the NHL scoreboard. The Vancouver Canucks taking on the Nashville Predators. Canucks leading this one 3-2. Game 6 currently underway. End of the first in that one. Currently a 0-0 game out there in the first round of the NHL playoffs. That one on TNT. End of the first, like I said. And at 8 p.m. in Las Vegas, the Golden Knights hosting the Dallas Stars. Dallas Stars lead that one 3-2. Now over to the NBA scoreboard. Clippers and Mavericks, they face off at 7:30. That one on ESPN. Dallas hosting the Mavericks. Dallas leads, like I said, 3-2. Cleveland Cavaliers currently underway against the Orlando Magic. Orlando Magic 40. Cleveland Cavaliers 36. 5:29 left to play in that one. Franz Wagner currently leads the way for the Orlando Magic with 16 points, going 3 of 3 from the free throw and 6 of 9 from the field. And leading the way for the Cleveland Cavaliers is Donovan Mitchell with 12 points, shooting 6 of 12 from the field. And also shooting with 12 points, Darius Garland, shooting 6 of 8 from the field. He has 2 rebounds to go along with that, as well as 2 assists. And lastly but not least, the UTEP Miner softball team taking on Western Kentucky. The Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, that at 6 p.m. They look for their 25th win in their last series before the Conference USA Softball Championship. This was your SportsCenter update for 600 ESPN El Paso.
All right, we are winding up a Friday afternoon edition of Sports Talk here along with Alberto Retta. I'm Adrian Broaddus. We are back here. And if you've been waiting to get in on the program, give us a call right now, 915-505-6009. Still to come, we will have our man, our boy, Tim Haggerty, who is going to join us next for story time here moving forward, and that is how we will do this as we continue here on the program. 915-505-6009. A lot of tweets from Esteban. I see them all, Esteban. I'm not going to read a single one. I appreciate your conversations, though, and let's keep it moving. There is an NBA doubleheader tonight, and it's going on right now. The Magic currently lead the Cleveland Cavaliers 40-36. 4 minutes to go here in the first half, and for this one, potential closeout for Cleveland if they could win this one on the road in Orlando. I think the Magic win this one. I think it's going to be a close one all the way to the end, and that's kind of how the last game went. It went all the way down to the wire. I don't believe in either of these teams here, Alberto. None of them. I don't believe in Cleveland. I don't believe in Orlando.
Yeah, that's kind of what I hate about this is all of, you know, sports really, I dare say, except soccer, and some people are going to get mad, but it's just like there's so many teams that face off that, you know, neither of these teams are going to be in the finals. And I hate to say this, some people might get mad, like, these teams don't matter, these games don't really matter. Like, in the bigger picture, yeah, they might affect how long it takes for us to know who's in the big one, but Cleveland will more than likely not be in the finals. Orlando will more than likely not be in the finals either, but, I mean, here they are facing each other off early in this Friday game, and in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, these guys won't be playing, and it'll just be like, oh, whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I think NBA is really where the cream rises to the top. The best of the best are going to be the ones who go out there. That's why I keep saying I'm not buying anything other than the Denver Nuggets stock right now. And same with the Boston Celtics stock. Those are the two teams right now. You got to prove it to me that they could act like a team could actually beat them. That's why I'm so intrigued with Minnesota and Denver series. That's coming up in the next round. Also want to, you know, and it's also interesting because first, the team who could, you know, exit here in the first round, Cavs or the Magic, maybe they panic in the offseason. Maybe they make some kind of trade. And I'm looking at Cleveland's side. I don't know what the future looks like with Donovan Mitchell or Darius Garland. They're going to have to make a decision this offseason on breaking that duo up and maybe pairing them out, those two guys or one of those guys with somebody else. And then for the Magic, maybe they make an all-in kind of trade and go after a big name here this offseason. So we'll wait to see what ends up happening there. I think people are looking forward to the second game of this doubleheader, and that's the Clippers taking on the Mavericks. 7:30 start. ESPN's got it. Dallas can close it out at home. Luka went off in the previous game. The Clippers struggled in the previous game, but somehow they've always managed to make this close. So if this ends up going to seven games, I wouldn't be that surprised. I got to mention this one for all the horse racing fans out there. Kentucky Derby weekend. That is right. The horses for this year, here's a list of the 20 horses right now and their morning line odds to win. This is per the Kentucky Derby's official website. So Fierceness, this one is a 5-2 odds to win it. Sierra Leone, love that song by Frank Ocean. Let's see how the horse does tomorrow. 3-1 odds to win it. Catching Freedom, 8-1. Forever Young, 10-1. Just a Touch, 10-1. You also have Honor Marie, 20-1 odds. Just Steal, 20-1 odds. Track Phantom, 20-1. And then Stronghold at 20-1 as well. Are you going to get up for Kentucky Derby, man? Are you going to be one of those who watches?
I might get up. If I happen to be up that early, I might turn it on. I was just going to ask. You might have already mentioned this, and I was just scrolling over here. But which one's the horse that competed here in Sutherland Park?
You know what? I'm not sure. I'll get that for our listeners here. If I don't get it right now here, I'll get it for our other ones or here on the back end of story time or something like that. But let me do some digging on that one. I don't know off the top of the head. You're asking the wrong person here, my friend. I am not the horse racing guy. You know who is? The man who got an award today, and that is Felix Chavez. So he's the one I defer to for all things horse racing. So yeah, that's our guy. 150th race running of the Kentucky Derby set for Saturday. Churchill Downs will have it. Louisville, Kentucky. Sunland Derby winner Stronghold. That's the one. There you go. Thanks, Alberto. I appreciate you asking me this question. 20-1 odds. That's the one who hopes to break through with a big performance. Followed up the Sunland Derby win with the win at the Santa Ana Derby in California. So interesting. Stronghold is a 20-1, you know, long shot in a sense to win the Kentucky Derby. So if you want a little local tie, if you want to place a bet on this one, Stronghold, just keep that name in mind here for the, you know, the 150th racing of the Kentucky Derby. So that's happening tomorrow as well. Mentioned a lot of UFC in the previous hour. We have not touched on Canelo boxing this weekend. All right, Alberto, you tell me, are you one of the guys who turns on the Spanish TV, Spanish channels, and watches it that way on a delay and just turns your phone off so you don't get it ruined by somebody else? Or do you just watch it illegally on a different site or something like that? What is your method on this?
I'll usually go a mix, so I'll try to watch it illegally. And then once I finish that up, I'll go over to the Mexican channels. Back when it was on the delay, I'd go over there and watch it for a second time with the Mexican announcers, because the Mexican announcers are kind of half the show.
They're amazing.
Yes, they're
amazing. They're amazing. And it's a great fight tomorrow. Canelo Alvarez, Jaime Munguia. By the way, Munguia fought here in El Paso, which is cool in itself. Canelo and Munguia, this is awesome. I mean, I love boxing. I love combat sports. I love this one right here, and especially since it's Cinco de Mayo weekend. Should be an excellent fight, man. Are you picking Munguia? Because I feel like you can't necessarily be a Mexican American like you and I and not go for Canelo. But also Munguia is he's an awesome fighter as well. It just feels like the spirit of Cinco de Mayo weekend to root for Canelo.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. It does go against what's in my blood. So no, I think Canelo is going to come out and dominate. I think Canelo's You know, arguably one of the better fighters in the last 15 years.
He's
the name that most rings out. And every year he has one or two fights that really tell you, hey, maybe boxing isn't as dead as I thought it was. You know, he'll fight Triple G or he'll fight other guys that are kind of coming up in the sport. I wouldn't be surprised if there's rumors that he might fight maybe a guy like Angel Ryan Garcia, even though Ryan Garcia is a lot smaller. But I just think that Canelo's is the name to go with. He's quick. He's impossible to hit. He's strong as all heaven and hell. I think he's the way to go. I think he's extremely difficult to beat.
He just defeated Charlo. This was by unanimous decision. This was back in September of last year. And then last Cinco de Mayo weekend, he actually defeated John Ryder. So interesting in itself. By the way, two Mexican-American fighters right here, or I should say just Mexican period, because Canelo came out of Guadalajara out in Jalisco. So that's interesting in itself. And then, Munguia comes out of Tijuana. So both of them kind of out of different areas out of Mexico, but really interesting in itself. I just feel like for Canelo, Mexican-American fighters or Mexican fans of boxing period have just been huge fans of him just over the years. So it's the familiarity, it's the name, it's the star power that Canelo brings. It's not just the fact that he reps his heritage left and right. But this is a guy who hasn't lost since he lost to Bivol back in 2022. And that was
a decision.
Yeah,
right?
Was a unanimous decision, man. So 2 years from that, you know, let's see if this time around Munguia has a chance. I think it's going to be really close. I think you said, you know, Canelo's going to pound him into it. I think Munguia is a really good fighter.
Yeah, he's undefeated.
And yeah, and in fact, you know, 27, prime of his career. Canelo 33. He's not, you know, he's not past his prime. He's still kind of like on the tail end of his prime. But still, it's just going to be a great fight. I can't wait for it. Boxing fans should be treated to it. What were your thoughts on all that went on with our boy Oscar De La Hoya, and I say our boy with a lot of sarcasm, Canelo Alvarez?
Well, look, apparently he used to come to the station a lot back in the day. Buzz was talking about it. I was on the show, and we touched on this on the show, and I said this, and I'll say it again. In my opinion, so the way it happened is Oscar De La Hoya prepares that statement where he comes after Canelo.
And the whole time.
That's how he leads off. How he starts off the presser. And so to me, as Oscar De La Hoya said, I have to make some noise for this fight to sell in order for it to sell as it should, because Munguia is not a talker like some of the better boxers are in the day. So talkers get you more views, and debacles like the one we saw, that gets you more views. And just kind of alluding to that, leading off of that, and kind of referencing what you said, and Munguia is a phenomenal fighter, but I think that the experience that Canelo brings is going to help him out and help him win this fight. And the experience in doing what? Canelo, every time he fights, and I'll say it like this, it's a spectacle.
Yeah.
It's a spectacle.
It's must-see TV, right?
Yeah, and it's usually around either Cinco de Septiembre or Cinco de Mayo or 16 de Septiembre, and it has a heavy Mexican tone, right? He comes out with the mariachis. He comes out with the Mexican artists, and it's a spectacle, and the lights turn off, and he comes out last, and the Mexicans get really into it, and the national anthem will play, and it's a spectacle.
Yeah,
and
it's
Mexicans
actually
sit and watch, and they devour that. They love that.
Okay, it's actually amazing, right? Because it's pageantry is what it is.
Really is.
It's amazing.
Showmanship
for sure. I love the walkouts. I think that you illustrated it great. Now tell me this, what's the best spread that you've had at these? Because man, you know, I'm thinking back on it. I grew up in a house where I'd go to my uncle's house for all the Cinco de Mayo fights. Really, really cherish those memories of just watching the big one or like the main event. And I loved always the fact that when you have the right kind of like spread out there for the right fight, you know, it just makes it even better. I look back on the Triple G ones, and those are obviously the memorable ones, right? But yeah, man, does anyone kind of stand out to you, or any past fight that you can remember from Canelo's history kind of really stand out to you that you remember as far as where you were, the setup, the spread, all of that kind of stuff?
You know, that's really hard, you know, because Canelo's been fighting for so long that it makes it kind of difficult.
It feels like it, right?
Yeah. He's been fighting for, it feels like, almost forever. But I think that if I really would have to make some memory, it's probably the fights against Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, that was awesome. That was like, yeah, that was back when you and I were both in high school, pretty much.
This was like still a while ago, but Floyd Mayweather, one could argue, was kind of in the last couple stages of his career, and El Canelo was kind of still in the prime of his, one could argue, right? But I mean, it was a great fight, but Canelo unfortunately didn't get the decision to go his way, and it was a phenomenal fight. I wish I could have another one. And look, I'll say this: Canelo's been fighting for a while, but I'm a guy that when I try to remember about boxing fights, the ones that I can remember are guys like there's this Mexican one called El Travieso Arce, which is this Mexican guy, and also guys like when I remember vividly when Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. would fight.
Yeah,
when he would
good
fight,
stuff,
people would get pretty hyped, and they'd come out, watch him, and then they'd put the highlights of Julio Cesar Chavez.
You know, the one that stands out to me is the draw, the Triple G and Canelo draw, and that was, you know, I was thinking, man, that seems like forever ago. 16 de septiembre in 2017. How about that? It wasn't actually that long ago. I was on this radio station as an intern at that time, so just kind of wrapping up my internship. I may have just started as a part-time employee here, but yeah, nonetheless, there's been some great Canelo fights over the years. It really, this one really makes you reflect on it. I love the Triple G trilogy, or whatever you want to call it, the series, the fights that we saw between those two. Maybe we get something out of this Munguia series here. Maybe Munguia is able to go up against Canelo, give him a really good fight, and we're able to see an excellent clash of boxing here tomorrow. But great weekend ahead. A lot of sports to watch. Playoffs actions going on right now. We didn't mention this. Darvin Ham, before we get to Tim Haggerty and story time, he has been fired by the Los Angeles Lakers. Two seasons, Darvin Ham went 90-74 with a Western Conference final push last season. I'm curious who the Lakers get. The first story that came out is, well, Lakers are going to be interested in Tyronn Lue. You know, he could come over from the Los Angeles Clippers and just has to move across the hall. Doesn't necessarily have to move that much. Reunite with his former player and LeBron James and his boy. That's not going to happen. As a result of the news today of Darvin Ham, the Clippers leaked it out that they want to re-sign Tyronn Lue to a big, lucrative, long-term extension that they can sign him on and ink him to continue to be their head coach moving forward. If I'm Ty Lue, I don't want to be in with the Clippers. I don't. I don't want to be with an organization where their superstar in Kawhi Leonard, it's an uncertain future on whether or not he's playing and how durable he is moving forward. So I wouldn't want to be a part of that. If I was Lue, I would want to be a part of the Lakers, because even with the post-LeBron scenario for the Lakers, it's probably a little clearer than what the Clippers are going to have to deal with moving forward. But regardless, that's how we're going to wrap up this segment. When we come back, it is story time with Tim Haggerty, voice of the Chihuahuas. That's all coming up next here as we wind things up on a busy Friday evening here on 600 ESPN El Paso. And now it is time for another edition of Storytime with the voice of the El Paso Chihuahuas. Keep that music in there, Alberta. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's go out to the voice of the Chihuahuas, Tim Haggerty, who's going to grace our airwaves with another edition of Storytime here this Friday evening.
Adrian, today's story is the myth of the Jersey Devil. For more than 250 years, residents of southern New Jersey have spoke of a creature that emerges from the marsh and screams. A man who saw it in 1790 said it was neither beast, nor man, nor spirit, but a hellish brew of all three. That's his exact quote. This devil reportedly had horns, some say part man, part animal. The Jersey Devil has been blamed for the loss of livestock, droughts, and wind that blew the tops off trees. Businessmen, postal workers, hunters, and police officers have all reported sightings of the Jersey Devil over the years. And yes, when the NHL came to New Jersey in 1982, the Jersey Devil was the inspiration for the New Jersey Devils team name.
This is amazing. Tim, can I give you a recent story for this one right here? This is amazing. Please. I didn't know this. October 13th, 2015, a man claimed to have photographed the mythical New Jersey Devil. He said this. This is David Black, who's a resident of the Garden State, said that he captured a winged animal on camera Monday evening. I'm looking at the pictures of what they claim it to be, and now his picture. Well, David Black told ABC News that he was driving around 6 o'clock Monday when he saw what he thought was a llama running outside. As he got closer, he pulled his camera and he snapped the photo, and then the creature sprouted wings and took flight from the golf course that he saw the creature on. What about that, Tim?
I love that. 2015. So we're talking about a quote from 1790 and in 2015. So the question is this the species of Jersey Devils, or has this thing lived itself for more than 200 years?
Wow. We'll never know, Tim. This is scary. I'm looking at some of the images. People can imagine some really scary images for this one right here. But the photo and the video itself of the man who claimed to have saw this, it doesn't look as scary. It looks almost like a chihuahua that's flying in, like, you know, in the air or something like that. I could see why he thought it was a llama, because it kind of has that kind of a, you know, a body when you look at it. But I didn't even realize, Tim, to your point about the hockey team, I didn't realize this inspired the Devil's nickname for their hockey team.
Nor did I. And to be honest with you, oftentimes on Friday mornings when I know it's story time, I'll think about something to seek out. This story found me. There was recently an Athletic article about the origin behind all 32 NHL team names. And I only made it halfway through. I only made it to New Jersey Devils, because when I read about this thing, I, of course, switched my browser and began searching for the myth of the Jersey Devil. All these years, I had no idea that that's the origin of the New Jersey Devils team name. And it was interesting to go back into the newspaper archives in 1982, they had other candidates for the team name, and they were very generic hockey-type names like Blades or Ice something or Meadowlanders, because they played in the Meadowlands right there near New York City in New Jersey for so long. But, I mean, Devils just wipes those names off the floor, so they picked the right one.
What are the chances that if you saw a mythical creature, or a creature in general, that just looks so odd and so different to you, that you would actually take a picture of it and you would have the presence of mind to actually pull out your phone and snap a picture or video of it?
I think that probably once our brains realize we're not in danger, then you go and take the picture. If you felt that this Jersey Devil was going to eat you, I think you have to run. But if you felt like you weren't in danger, you know, snap a photo. That's kind of the sense I get from animal people over the years, is that most species, if you don't bother it, you'll be fine. Of course, there are some exceptions to that. I remember when I lived in Vermont, they said, moose, they're fine. They'll look right back at you. As long as you're not messing with their children, they'll keep on walking. Deer are the same. But they said, do not mess with a bear. That was their advice.
Yeah, I totally understand that one right there, Tim. Hey, real quick on the El Paso Chihuahuas from last night's game. What a flip, man. I thought the Chihuahuas were well into a win. I tuned in, I think, in the fourth inning, and they were winning big time. And then I looked at the final score when you sent out your release later that evening, or last evening, and Sugarland rallied back to win. What was yesterday really like when you saw how the Space Cowboys were able to rally back and come up with a victory?
Yeah, I did see it the same way that you did. The Chihuahuas were playing great baseball coming in. They had won two games in a row. They were ahead 5-0 in the fourth inning, but Sugarland scored the final eight runs of the game and won 8-5. And that was the difference. Was, for example, the previous night, the Chihuahuas had four different relievers pitch shutout outings, whereas last night, both the starter and the bullpen both allowed runs, and Sugarland scored the final eight runs of the game, including three in the eighth inning against the Chihuahuas bullpen. So, you know, the more and more you see the simpler baseball seems, it really just is so much about the pitching. On the nights the Chihuahuas are pitching well, they're winning games. Tonight, you know, they've got Nolan Watson on the mound, who leads the league in starts and in wins. So hopefully a shot to win their third game in the last four tries.
Awesome stuff. Well, we'll hear from you in just a little bit. Tim, thank you so much for joining us here for Storytime. Excellent Storytime. And, next time you see the New Jersey Devils, you'll know exactly where it originated. I appreciate it again, Tim.
Thank you, Adrian.
All right, that's Tim Haggerty. We'll hear from him, the voice of the Chihuahuas, here in less than 3 minutes. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Chihuahuas baseball here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, we're back here on Sports Talk. UFC 301 is this weekend. It's Alexander Pantoja. He's taking on Steve Urseg. We're going to get to Steve Urseg's conversation with us here from earlier today. Just want to preface this one. If you want to watch UFC 301, get the pay-per-view on ESPN Plus by just downloading the ESPN app on your smart TV or your device and buying the pay-per-view. It's UFC 301 Pantoja versus Urseg, and it's happening tomorrow out at Rio de Janeiro. Let's get out to our conversation with Steve Urseg first. He's the contender in this big one tomorrow, and this is the main event, the title fight. He is the flyweight contender. By the way, Pantoja, he's held this belt for a while now. Can Steve Urseg snap his five-fight win streak, or will Pantoja continue as the champion in the flyweight division? We'll find out tomorrow. Here's our conversation with Steve Urseg. And I apologize ahead of any audio issues that we may have had throughout this conversation, but as we started the conversation here, I asked Steve simply what it's like being an Australian fighter who is ascending in the sport right now and getting the opportunity of a lifetime in this title fight, the flyweight main event tomorrow for UFC 301.
Yeah, it's still surreal, like saying my face on a poster, seeing Jose Aldo fighting before me on the card, stuff like that. It's quite a unique and weird experience. Obviously, there's a lot of nerves, a lot of adrenaline and excitement and all that sort of thing. But just focused on the task and ready to go.
This is the big one, and I think a lot of people are really excited. I mean, the UFC has been on an amazing run as of late. The last three or four pay-per-views have been excellent. How do you guys just hope to continue that momentum here going into Rio de Janeiro?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the last card is going to be hard to top. Had, I think, 13 former champions or something on it, and like best card of all time. But I'm going to go out there, focus on having trying to obviously win the title. And If it's exciting, but I can only do what I can control. So go out there, give it a crack, and hopefully the crowd enjoys it.
How are you enjoying Rio de Janeiro so far? What's it like, or are you just kind of locked in, focused in on the big one?
No, it's very different than I expected. I thought that I'd be here and it'd be not very safe and people wouldn't be a fan of mine. They'd be hating on me a little bit. Obviously, I'm fighting a Brazilian in Brazil, and but everything's been like very pleasant. People are nice. I've been to the beaches. I played some tennis and volleyball with the locals. We went to a samba at the favelas. And yeah, it's been an absolute treat being in Rio.
That's excellent. Hey, I got to ask you a little bit about your background, because I think our listeners here out in El Paso, Texas, will really appreciate the fact that you grew up a huge WWE fan, and WWE is huge here in El Paso, just as it is for everybody who loves combat sports and stuff like that. Who is your biggest big fan of growing up in the WWE?
So my favorite was Stone Cold Steve Austin. Mostly, I guess, for his attitude and, like, obviously Australia, big beer-drinking country, so having him smash the beers on the fence and stuff like that was pretty cool. And then Rey Mysterio was probably number two.
What was it about Rey Mysterio that really intrigued you? He's a fan favorite out here in El Paso too, man, because of the Lucha Libre connection.
Yeah, I think the mask combined with him being a smaller guy, and it was super athletic and, like, gymnastic and that sort of thing. He was just super fun to watch and acrobatic.
Now, you talk about guys who've done a little bit of WWE and then merged into the UFC. How much of an influence were guys like Brock Lesnar to you to just embark on the UFC and maybe train and take this sport as seriously as you do?
So he is actually the reason I started mixed martial arts. I didn't know what it was before him, but he was the first guy to sort of come over, and like the promos got me. It was biggest hands ever. I had to create like a new gloves for him. I had to cut the heavyweight limit, all that sort of stuff. And I just didn't see how a guy that size could lose to anybody. And then to see him get tapped out by Frank Mir, I was instantly hooked. I told my dad immediately, I need to find out whatever that is. Let's go to a gym and let's start.
How much pride do you have being an Australian fighter? You're coming out of Perth. The Australian fighters have been killing it as of late. Jack Della Maddalena is one of those that you talk about right away, who's ascending in this sport in a big way. But how much pride do you take in being an Australian fighter here in the UFC?
Yeah, I take great pride, and I try to fight in a way that represents them proudly, I guess. I think we're some of the toughest people in the world. And we're starting to show that on the stage in the world.
Most definitely. Tell us a little bit about your opponent in Pantoja. I feel like, you know, you look at the past 3 years, he's fought a lot in this class. He's done a good job of ascending himself. And you guys are both coming in on a streak here. He's coming in on a fight streak. You're coming in on a big fight streak. Tell us a little bit about your opponent here in this matchup.
Yeah, he's obviously a very good fighter. He's a champ for a reason. He's super determined and resilient, great grappling, good scrambles, and got a good chin. He's going to come forward aggressively and look to take my head off. And I just think that I'm the better tactician, the better technician, and I'm going to keep him away and put some hands on his face.
All right, one last question to wrap things up here. Steve, thank you so much for all the great time. Really looking forward to the big one on Saturday. But just what do you want? What is your message to all your fans out there who've watched your journey and really watched you ascend? You talked about how you're really just taking advantage of just being here in the moment. But what's your final message to the fans out there who are going to watch you this Saturday here at UFC 301?
My message is I'm coming in to put on a hard, tough fight. I'm going to war with Pantoja, and yeah, tune in. Let's go. I'm going to look for the finish at all times. So it's going to be exciting.
Excellent. Steve, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
Cool. Thank you very much. Enjoy your day.
Take care. You too.
He's Steve Urseg, and he's contending for the flyweight championship tomorrow against Alexander Pantoja. It's UFC 301. We're talking to Jonathan Martinez on the back end of this break. But before we do that, let's get out to Alberto Retta. He is back with another bottom of the hour SportsCenter update.
The big one is this Saturday. It's UFC 301. It's Josie Aldo taking on Jonathan Martinez, who joins us right now on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline here on 600 ESPN out in El Paso, Texas. Jonathan, thank you so much. We had to make this contact with you today. You're from you fought out of Texas, and you are putting on for this big one here on Saturday. What's the range of emotions like going into Rio de Janeiro?
Man, feels good. It's been good all week. Everything's been calm. Like pretty much like a regular weekend week and stuff, so you know, I don't have Jose Aldo in front of me, but I seem like a regular person. You know, I'm just gonna go in there and do my job. You know, I know I put all the work in, and I'm just gonna show it on Saturday.
What's the lead up to this fight been like?
It's been good. Training camp's been really hard. You know, I'm not gonna lie, it's been hard in Colorado. I've been there at Factory X. You know, I've been training there for 6 years, so you know, I have all these great guys there. I have Chris Gutierrez, Yusuf Salah, Markel, you know, Nam. I got all these other great fighters, you know, to mention. But, you know, it's been really good. I mean, I'm excited for this.
For your opponent and Josie Aldo, he took a 2-year hiatus. This is kind of weird, right? Because he was atop the sport, and then he took, the 2-year hiatus. What do we even expect from him going into this one? He's at age 37. He's one of the best to do it. But taking some time away from the sport, it's never easy.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't really say much because, you know, he's always come good. So I expect the best of Jose Aldo to come in there. You know, I can't say, oh, he's going to be slow. He's going to be this. And, you know, we just got to see what he comes and stuff. You know, I know I put the work in, and, you know, I'll be ready.
You're on a 6-fight win streak right now. Do you kind of feel like this right here is something, your biggest fight that you had that you have ahead right now?
Yes, yeah, I think it's one of my biggest fights. To me, like all my fights, every fight I fight, I feel like it's the biggest fight, and I'm getting closer to my goal. So, yeah, this is one of my biggest fights right now, and I'm focused on this 100%.
The Dragon, that's your nickname. Where did this come from? Where did this originate?
So it actually came, it was in the seventh grade. I was fighting in the streets, and well, my hair back in the day was slicked back and it was pretty big. And my ears were kind of bigger just because, you know, I have cauliflower right now. And they said, I don't like a dragon and stuff. So it just kept like that. And in the beginning, I didn't like it, but, you know, I just, since that seventh grade, you know, it's been, so they would have been calling me Dragon.
You were born in L.A. You were raised in Texas, specifically Plainview out in East Texas. What was it like growing up in Texas? What are some of your memories out here in the Lone Star State?
It's good. I was born in Plainview, Texas. And I was raised in Plainview, Texas. It was good there. It was really good. You know, it's like it's a little bit hard just because I came from L.A. So when I was growing up, there's a lot of fighting. So we do a lot of fighting, and sometimes I fight. I wait Thursday to fight, and then Friday to fight, and then I would get ready at my house. Like I would hit the bag, and I remember I hit the bag, and then I wouldn't try to like drink none of that stuff that other kids are doing that because I wanted to be in shape. To me, one day of training, hitting the bag, I'm ready for tomorrow. So that was me back in the day.
What was it like? Like, what was the fight scene like growing up in Plainview?
It was just like, it's a small town, so it's like, right. It's like a lot of gangs, and it just people like, you had to choose a color, like red or blue, and you just got to go in there and, you know, fight pretty much. You know, sometimes I'll fight my friend just for fun, because my other friend would be like, hey, you got to fight him. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, you fight him, or we're going to fight you. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll fight him. So, yeah, it was crazy.
But now you're putting on for the state of Texas, right? You're going on the biggest stage of them all, going to fight out at Rio de Janeiro. What's that like? I mean, just doing it out of the Lone Star State and getting the chance to do this on a global level. It's not just on the U.S. national level, but doing it on the global level.
Yeah, man, it feels great. You know, it's just all the hard work I've done and stuff all these years. And now I'm fighting out here in co-main event. It was my second co-main event, but I'm excited to go in there and stuff.
Your left leg is what impresses me so much. I also love your footwork, your counters on defense. What is it that you pride yourself in as a fighter?
I just work on everything. I like to mix the puzzles up and stuff. And I like to figure it out just because the older I'm getting, I started finding new tools and just starting to mix things around. So it's just pretty cool now. Like I know more about the sport and now I know how to use it more.
And for Aldo, he loves to leg check. He loves to do things like that. How do you kind of, you know, adjust your game plan to what his strengths are?
He's been fighting like the same all this year. So I got to mix it up a little bit, you know, get him distracted before I can do my own thing. And yeah, I'm ready for it. You know, I've been training hard for this fight. So, you know, it's going to be good.
Last question from me. And Jonathan, thank you so much. You were awesome today. Really appreciate it. For all the people out in Texas who have followed your story, who've followed your journey throughout this time, what do you want to say to them? They've stood by you throughout this whole process, and now you're getting a chance to go on one of the biggest stages of them all, 301 tomorrow co-main event.
Yeah, I was saying thank you, Texas. And, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that want to do something. They're like nervous and stuff. Just do it because, you know, at the end of the day, you try hard, you're going to chase that dream. So that's what I did, and look at me now.
Most definitely. Jonathan, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the time.
Thank you.
And that was our conversation from earlier today with Jonathan Martinez, who's fighting in the co-main event against Josie Aldo in UFC 301. This is taking place out at Rio de Janeiro. And Jonathan Martinez, you heard it from him. He was born in L.A. but grew up in Texas, Plainview, Texas, that is. He's fighting in the bantamweight division, and Josie Aldo will be his opponent tomorrow. Again, it's the big one. Alexander Pantoja taking on Steve Urseg. After this break, we will talk to our KISS FM morning show host, Iris Lopez, about the Mija Market that is coming to Chuco Relic this Sunday, Cinco de Mayo. Check out this conversation. It's coming up next right here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, welcome back here on Sports Talk. Adrian Broaddus as we continue here. A busy Friday afternoon and a busy weekend ahead. We're going to be talking about the Mija Market, and joining us right now is our KISS FM morning show host. She is Iris Lopez, and she is also the founder of Mija Yes You Can. So, Iris,
thank you so much for doing this. Of course. As always, I talk sports with you on Kiss FM.
Yes, you do.
And now you're coming on and talking Miha with us here on the show.
Excited. Thanks for having me so I can spread the word to everyone so they can join us.
This is this Sunday, Chuco Relic. Tons of vendors, tons of people involved. Give all our listeners the latest and the lowdown for this Sunday's event.
So, yeah, so it's our fourth annual Miha Market. It's a celebration of our anniversary. It was going to happen back in March, the end of March, but there was a big windstorm. The weather was like, it's not going to happen. So we had to postpone it, and it's going to be Cinco de Mayo. So it's a Miha celebration. Cinco de Miha is what we like to call it. So we're going to have over 30 women-owned vendors locally, and they're going to be out there selling all their products and just a range of products. We also have food trucks. We're going to have live music. Mariachis are going to be playing. Mariachis Los Pasajeros are going to be out there playing for us because it's Cinco de Mayo, you know. And we're going to have the Pie Sisters joining us for an acoustic set as well. And then DJ Rach O is going to be our main, you know, music, providing the music. Wow. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
This sounds like a block party that's right? going to happen on Cinco de Mayo. What an exciting event. Miha, yes, you can. Tell us the origin story and tell for our listeners who might not be aware of Miha, yes, you can. Tell us a little bit about the whole organization.
Of course. So we're a local nonprofit organization, 4 years young. I created it right before the pandemic, you know, just as to provide a platform for women of all ages, all backgrounds, to just feel comfortable to talk about stuff, ask for help, whatever it is they need. So how we help our community is we create scholarships, and actually the Miha Market is our biggest fundraising event of the year, and it is going to help us all the money we make there. So we're going to have our pop-up, sell our t-shirts, that goes right back into our scholarship foundation fund so we can create scholarships for women in our community. We also provide workshops, like we have our financial workshops partnered with First Light Federal Credit Union. We do that throughout the year. We have different workshops in that area. We also give back to other nonprofit organizations. So we partner with them and just help spread their mission, and they help spread our mission as well. And it's pretty much just, you know, us helping women in our community however we can.
Let's talk a little bit about women in sports. Mm-hmm. We've seen a great transformation over the last years. And there's been a lot of excitement and hype. You and I were on the women's basketball national championship train throughout the whole process. We were big Caitlin Clark fans, and we loved the South Carolina run on their own. Their coach, Dawn, she's fantastic and everything like that. But how cool is it to see a sport like that, college basketball, really take so many people and make them so excited? Maybe they weren't college basketball fans on the women's side before, but they definitely are now.
Oh, it's beautiful to see. I mean, representation matters. So young girls see other girls making a name, making a mark in the sports world, and they it reminds them that, you know, yeah, I can do that too. So I'm going to keep going for it. I'm going to keep pushing for it. And we do a lot of stuff too with women in sports here locally. I know we have sponsored softball teams, young girls softball teams, young girls in track. So it's pretty much just us trying to, you know, empower them at a young age so they could keep going and keep pushing for it.
I love it. Back to the big Miha Market this weekend. It's from 11 to 4, Sunday, May 5th. Again, Chuco Relic will have it, 3750 Gateway Boulevard East, if you've never been out there. By the way, Chuco Relic, fantastic place.
Oh,
it's
yes.
fitting that you're doing the Miha Market with a great local place like Chuco Relic, a place that loves to celebrate El Paso.
Oh, yeah, and it's woman-owned. Chelsea is the creative mind behind Chuco Relic, and she's been a huge champion of Miha Yes You Can. They're the only local store that sells Miha shirts, and then a portion of the proceeds that they sell goes right back to us. So it's a great partnership, and we love partnering them every year for the Miha Market.
100%. In fact, attendees are encouraged to bring pet supply donations. Mm-hmm. This year's market will support A Home to Bark and Purr, which is a local initiative dedicated to aiding pets in need. Tell us a little bit about this.
So every year we like to, so philanthropy is one of our pillars for Miha Yes You Can, which means we like to partner with other nonprofit organizations that might not have, you know, get the coverage or the stuff that they need. So we want them to join our network of people so we can help spread their mission and their word. Last year we had Her Pantry join us, and people donated feminine products. Then we've had the Center Against Sexual Family Violence join us. We like to support other nonprofits, and this year, A Home to Bark and Purr is in need of pet supply donations, and we have a full list of them on the Kiss El Paso website. You could go to the website, and there is an article that has the full list of pet supplies. It includes dog food, canned, dry, cleaning supplies, pillows, and just stuff like that. And when That's you do awesome. That, you bring that donation and you will get a free piece of Mija cake because it's a celebration. So we're going to have cake and a special Mija cookie.
Excellent. Hey, just so everybody knows, this event is free this weekend, open to the public, and raffles are even taking place every 20 minutes. You got to be present to win, so make sure you hang around. Don't just sign up for the raffle and leave. Hang around for a little while. Say hi to us. We'll be there. KLAQ, 600 ESPN, KISS FM. We'll be out there and celebrating with everybody out at the Mija Market.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and you know, there's going to be music, there's going to be vendors, there's going to be food. So you could stay there, you know, all day if you wanted to. We're going to have tables, games as well, too, so you can win some prizes. And these prizes are donated from all the vendors. So that's why every 20 minutes, you don't have to purchase anything. You just sign up and enjoy yourself. And if you're still there and you win a prize, that's it. You win a prize.
KLAQ.com, KISSElPaso.com. Find out more information on the Mija Market, which is coming up this Sunday, Cinco de Mayo, from 11 to 4 out at Chuco Relic. Iris, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm hoping to see everybody out there.
Yes, thank you for having me, and I'm excited for it.
Iris Lopez joining us here as we continue. We'll take a break right now. When we come back, more sports talk here on 600 ESPN El Paso.